Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, that galaxy over there, and our galaxy right here in Southern California, and the world beyond, this is Force Center presents Other Center. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Lando.
And Joseph, today we've got cues of the other, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. I put out a fresh call to our patrons on Patreon, and we got a lot of different and interesting questions coming in that will keep us bouncing back and forth from the seasonal, the topical, to the evergreen, to the deadly serious, to the deadly silly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We go all over the place around these spots there. Before we get to all of that, we are going to, as always, that you can support the podcast by going to Audible, because that's what the podcast is brought to you by. Audible. Get a free audiobook download. I got the script in front of me finally. And a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcefinner. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Right now, we have a recommendation of a book you should try out on Audible. And you know what? I just looked it up, and he didn't ask me to do this. You should check out Comedy of Doom by Joseph Scrimshaw, narrated by Joseph Scrimshaw, Bill Corbett, and Shannon Custer, among others over there. It's available for your ears, and you could support Joseph and the show in the process by getting Comedy of Doom by going to audibletrial.com/forcefinner. Again, that's audibletrial.com/forcefinner for your free audio book. From that to an ask, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for promoting the book, which is old. It's 11 years old. So get it for the parts that make you legitimately laugh, and then get it for the jokes that are like, that is referencing a television show that is long gone. Long gone. Anyway, moving on to the ask. We have been asking listeners if you're enjoying the Other Center era of Force Center while we support the SAG After Strike to leave a review on Apple Podcasts celebrating what you enjoy about this era of our podcast. A couple of you left some really nice reviews of Other Center, and it is deeply appreciated.
It is indeed. It is indeed. So head over there, subscribe, review anywhere you can. It helps. But the Apple ones really help. It helps us in the rankings, which helps with numbers, which helps with ads, which helps with the life of this podcast. Plus, you know, it's nice to hear good things every now and then. We're going to go into some questions here. Jennifer is with us. I think last week you had to step out, Jen. So I'll love hearing all your takes on this. And we've got a lot of things to get to, Joseph.
Yeah, yes. That's right. The first question here comes from Bill Rooklin, which is written with the B in all caps in the Rooklin. So I'm assuming this is a Bill who lives in Brooklyn. Bill Rooklin. Bill Rooklin asks, was there a local lore scary story from where you grew up that frightened you? Jennifer and Ken, we've talked about you growing up in similar spaces. So maybe you have a similar story. But Jennifer, do you have a local lore scary story?
You know, I was thinking about this and there was only two things that came to mind. And the first one was when I worked at Disneyland. Ooh. There was a lot of, yeah, like, you know, the tunnels underground, people getting decapitated on rides or getting injured.
I've heard of it.
Right?
Yes.
They don't like to talk about it, but I will say that I was working, one time as Jasmine in Frontier. No, we worked in Adventureland, but next to us is Frontierland. And we were out there doing what's called a meet and greet, my Aladdin and I, maybe even Genie. And all of a sudden we saw, and it was kind of it was a weekday. There wasn't a lot of people. It was kind of quiet. We saw Jesse, the character from Toy Story, like the, you know, big headed character, and somebody else, I don't know if it was like somebody random, like Goofy or something, running towards us, like literally like out of a movie with, and I don't want to say terrified look on their face, cause I couldn't see their faces, but their arms were like waving and they're like, something terrible has just happened on Big Thunder Mountain. And I'm, again, they're very quiet about these kinds of things. But I know an ambulance came. I think that somebody was either thrown from the ride because of their own, like they stood up, one of those kinds of things. And it was, there was a lot of uncertainty about whether the person was killed, how badly they were injured, blah, 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 blah. And we were like, oh, shoot. So we all had to go inside and they canceled the meet and greet. And it was like, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen? I don't know what happened, to be honest, because they made that go away real fast. And this was before social media. So, I mean, can you imagine? I cannot imagine. How that would have been handled.
No,
now.
The million videos of Goofy running in terror through the park, right?
Yeah. So that was, there was a lot of stuff like that, but it's hard to get it out of people because they don't want to talk about that side of Disney, understandably so, because it is a very safe place and a happiest place on earth. But sometimes tragedy strikes, like the America Sings ride where somebody got stuck. As this, it was like this, these revolving, Ken, do you remember that? Yeah. The America Sings ride? Where it's like, how would you describe it? Like these revolving doors? Rooms?
Yeah, rooms. Yeah. And it slowly spins, right? And it's now, now where like one of the Star Wars bays is, or at least was last time I was there.
Yes. And somebody went behind the, where you're not supposed to be, and they got smushed, crushed between the two walls or whatever. And that's why they had to get rid of that ride.
I'm fascinated by this stuff here. And I know we might be riding some lines with what we're talking about in terms of characters. So I'll try to be careful. But lore of Disneyland is fascinating. I know there's a very popular YouTube channel, The Funkland, which I've watched from time to time. I get it. There are deaths that are confirmed. That one, the mast of the ship, the Columbia, fallen and hitting someone. I remember that one. A lot of stuff, but I grew up.
You feel like just heart attacks too, right?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. I was there one time when I was pretty sure there was a bomb threat going on or a suspicious device. And it was the only time in the years I've gone there where you saw that they were like evacuating quietly as they could, part of like Fantasyland.
Mm.
A bunch of staff. And I, you know, I was still working as security director, and I was there with a friend who worked in the malls as well. We both were like, oh, something's going down because all these people in suits are talking.
Yeah.
Weird. No. Oh, let's just casually. Oh, there's 15 cast members here slowly pushing everyone out of this area.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a bomb. This is a bomb device. Suspicious device. So that, but the one I grew up with, because I talked about here before about being afraid of Space Mountain and that being a fear my mom kind of transferred onto me. My friends in elementary school, we all heard the story that someone stood up and they got decapitated and the head landed on the car. And I don't, to this day, don't know if that's true or not, but man, it scared me for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It feels real close. It feels like don't stand up in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they turn the lights on, whenever you see mm-hmm. them turn the lights on in Space Mountain, you do see, you're like, oh, it is pretty close if you were to stand up. That's not good. And just how, it looks a little sketchy.
When the lights are on, you're like this. I love little, there's a basketball court up in Matterhorn, all that kind of stuff you get through. But like that one, I was like 7 or 8 and I heard that. And then you just repeat it as fact to the next
guy. Yeah. Mm. Jennifer, did you get exposed to stories that either you knew weren't true or were like, you didn't know whether that was verified or not?
There was a lot of like rumors. the tunnels are, I mean, that's real. I went down those. I wouldn't even really call them. Well, yeah, they are tunnels. But there's just a lot. Like what's crazy is that I remember everything is so hush hush. I once was going through Tomorrowland and I think someone was shoplifting and just like a normal store. And all of a sudden it was like these people just suddenly emerged, these security guys, they were dressed like tourists. Boom, like 5 of them just got on this person, quickly escorted it out. Like they did take a lot to preserve the magic of the place, right? Like you're talking about, Ken, it's just like, do very quietly, very, calmly. But yeah, there is that other side, which I find fascinating, but it is hard to get it verified.
Yes. Yeah.
Some people can really take it like, oh, okay, that seems a bit silly.
Mm-hmm.
But I know what I saw that day in Adventureland. What they're called leads, like our managers, like they were concerned and freaked out. And so something was going down.
Yeah. I did an episode of my old Obsessed podcast with somebody who is obsessed with these kinds of behind the scenes Disney stories. She had been talking about that because many, many people have wonderful times there and love it, that there is problems with people wanting to scatter remains of loved ones in various water features.
Yes.
Did you ever encounter that, Jennifer?
I did not, but I've heard about that. That's not a good idea.
I don't know if I've actually been there, but one time Pirates of the Caribbean got shut down and we were taken out and that was immediately the number one rumor coming out of the line. Which may have been true or not. In that particular case, I don't know, but yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. How about you, Ken? Any local lore stories that were not the kid on Space Mountain?
Yeah, no. My hometown area, Central Coast, California, there is a place, it's called the Napomo Mesa. It's just the city of Napomo and Napomo. And there's a giant mesa. You have to get up to one point, like literally you have to drive out this long road. And it's a cool spot. And then there's it was more a quote unquote country road when I was growing up. There's a lot more developments and housing tracks and all that kind of stuff up there, right? But there's a giant dip in the road. Like we're talking, you'd go drive down and at the bottom of the hill was our town's white lady myth, right? The white lady haunting you appears in your car is I think every town has it. Right. But I had heard it, as I've said before, I'm easily scared. So as a kid, I have to ignore it. But once I started driving and I like my dad, even when I was growing up, he just gets in his car and I just drive. And he loves taking the quote unquote country roads, the back roads in our town. You don't have to take the freeway. And the moment I got my 1981 Ford Fairmont, Joseph, that's the thing I loved. Mm-hmm. If I go into town visiting now, I'll tell my mom and dad, all right, I'll be back in about an hour and just going to go drive. And the first time I started, had my license and I had my car and I went down the hill, like every detail of that story suddenly jumped back in my mind. And I would often be late coming back from my friend's house and everything would be like midnight and you're going through there and it can kind of get foggy and it's out there in nowhere. And I don't believe any of it except for when I'm there in that car at midnight. I hope the white lady doesn't appear in my car and ask about her children. Like I said, this is a very, I've looked this up, even the white lady thing, and it's not just ours, you know, but it's our place where this is. And there was one point in high school, like my friends and I, we weren't like pranky wild kids, but we were filming something, but we got out of our cars in that area around, midnight, 12:30 one night. And, you know, there's train tracks, no trains, and you hear every sound. And all, we're 17, 18 years old. All of us at once were like, you know, we got the white lady, man. We got to get out of here. And we hadn't discussed it before. It wasn't like we all sat down and we're like, hey, we're going to the white lady. We just all grew up in that area. And we all had heard the story. And so that's ours. And then years, I kind of forgot about it, but hadn't really talked about it. Years later, I reconnected with an old friend from high school named Manu Interrame, who would go on to appear in some Star Trek stuff as Ichib. And he wrote a screenplay and he goes, hey, can I have you read this? And it was based on a lot of things that happened in our town, including there's two very famous murders that happened there. And there was one horrendous one that happened. And he kind of incorporated some of the elements of that and everything, but he had the white lady stuff in it. And I wrote about it. Like, this is great because that took me back to being 12. And I just love it. So anyways, that's our local lore. There's also a place nearby, not too far from there, called the Crystal Rose Inn. It was also the Rose Victorian Inn. And you can find it listed on supposed haunted locations as well. So there's some myths around that as well, that maybe it's the white lady's cousin.
Wow. Oh. So was the myth that the white lady would appear in the backseat of your car and would she allegedly in the myth do something to you? Or was this truly deep fear of a lady's going to show up and talk to me about her feelings in the backseat of my car?
That could have been the major problem for all of us young suburban boys. Yeah, it's something around if you're there at midnight at the bottom of the hill, she'll appear in her car. She may have lost her children in a stagecoach accident or something. Back in the day. And she'll ask you in a haunted voice, where are my kids? And ain't nobody got time for that. I don't want that. I don't want that in my Ford Fairmont. So I would try to.
No, that's perfectly creepy by itself. Absolutely. Yeah, honestly, if you're just parked at the side of a street and a totally corporeal woman got in the backseat of your car, that would be sad and creepy and alarming and all those things. Yeah. But it is just funny when you look at like ghost stories of like, and don't do this or they'll pull your intestines out of your nose. Like this same ghost story is.
Yeah.
A sad lady will talk to you about her feelings. Like, no. Never.
Well, it's so funny because if you talk to someone a little bit more connected to that world, even my fiance Grace, like they might say that. Well, if she is in your car, maybe just do talk to her about that. Maybe ask her, oh, I'm so sorry, can I help? And maybe it's a good experience, but our fee will take over.
It's just like a really good Uber ride. Just roll with it. Whatever they want to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't remember any particular this house's this spirit will demand this, leave two quarters here or this will happen kind of thing. My dad, I don't think he meant it to be like a scary local lore thing. I think it was just something that a paranoia he had grown up with because he grew up in a rural area of Minnesota with the extremely heavy winters. But he told us from a young age, like when it snows, you have to shovel immediately or it might pile up and you'll be stuck inside. So that scared me. He just meant it practically because in rural areas, if you're in a blizzard, you got to get yourself out before you get trapped in there. But for me, it was like, oh, there's a half an inch of snow. We'll be trapped inside forever. And then when I got to my teen years, like, wait, this is BS. The only haunted house thing, I honestly don't know if it was actually a longstanding myth or was something like the older kids made up that day. Lived in a close suburb of Minneapolis. And it's funny to say now, but people are like, did you know about the house? Like, what house? that spooky house. Like, what's spooky about it? I'm like, well, some things happen there. Like, what things? We can't say. I'm like, well, what's spooky about it? That it's on stilts. So it was on a hill, so it had stilts, which in Minnesota is not a common thing, which is funny to me now. Of like, I walk a block in Los Angeles and like all these houses are on stilts because they're built in the hills, you know, it's just geography. You know, what could really spook somebody in California is this house has a basement in the rest of the world. Like, yeah, it's a house thing. But for me at the time, like, ooh, a house on the stilts. And it was kind of at the end of a block, to my recollection. So it had a kind of wooded area, so you could kind of walk through this sort of wooded path and see the house on stilts. And the neighbor kids all wanted to do it. So the only spooky thing that actually happened is we're going down the hill, and it was muddy. And my brother started sliding, and his hand flew out and whacked me in the face and sent my glasses flying into the mud. And then it very quickly went from spooky, creepy, is there a mean old man in the house on stilts who'll come out with a shotgun, to I lost my glasses. It was like a very weird, like a very real, not spooky, just problem. Like, I can't see. And it was, you know, and my parents can't afford another pair. So I'm just... So that was the haunted house experience, was digging in the mud for hours to find my glasses, which I finally did.
Oh, my gosh.
A white lady showed up and said, are these your spectacles?
You clearly have very bad astigmatism. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. That was my haunted experience.
Love it. Love it. Oh,
great question, Bill Rooklin. And hey, Bill Rooklin, if you want to let us know your answer to this question, anybody on Patreon, if you want to respond to your own question and let us know the answer and keep the conversation going on Patreon, feel free to do so, because I'm very curious what your local lore stories might be. But we're going to move on to our next question from Bell. Bell says, I love road trips and am a sucker for roadside attractions. World's largest prairie dog? Check. Any mystery spot? Heck yeah. Give me 3 weeks and 2,500 miles, and I'm a happy camper. What's your take on road trips? Ken, you do a lot of road trips out of practicality, it seems. But do you love road trips in and of themselves?
I do. I do. I love them. Like I said earlier, I love driving. I know a good walkable city is something I appreciate more now than I think I did in a smaller town where I didn't need to walk. You just get into the Fairmont and drive. But I do love it. And whether it's, you know, driving 6 hours to a gig in Arizona, or it's about 3 hours to my hometown, that's not much of a road trip. But, you know, if you stop for food, it becomes one. And then I've driven cross country twice on the 40 route to East Tennessee. And unfortunately, I couldn't take as much time. But there's just something that I like about it. I don't stop as much as... like Bell's suggesting here with these mystery spots. And is that a giant 30-foot cross? What is that over there? And why is that? I do love it. And I love watching things like that. I was a fan, I think he passed away about 2012, of Huell Howser in the show California's Gold. Never seen Huell Howser is just an absolute, just legendary character here in California. The show on KCET where he just would travel. Sometimes it'd just be like Pink's hot dogs. Other times it'd be like, you know, wow, look at this big rock on the side of the highway. Where do we get a shot of this rock? And I love stuff like that. And there's a YouTube subculture of just people who are like, oh, I bet you didn't know there's a monorail in the desert outside of Vegas. Here it is. Here's the remains of it. So I wish I had a little bit more time to explore like that. But there's just something, open road, some music. I don't stop for food or I try to not stop for food or gas until you get on the road. Like, don't just get going and then you pull off maybe 20 miles or an hour in and get some food and gas and keep on going. It's just, love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you. I love road trips. I read On the Road when I was pretty young, and that was like, oh, the romance of that. And I love the, you know, the truth of them, that they're kind of this emotional roller coaster where it is this sort of the fun and the freedom and the way America was really sold, cars and freeways, of like, nothing can stop you. You can go anywhere. Everything's connected. But then, you know, being from the Midwest, sometimes there's like, you start out on a road trip and you're like, freedom, we can go anywhere. We can do anything. How about looking at corn for about 10 hours? You know, freedom, adventure. So like there's this part of, even if when you're in the most beautiful, interesting, exotic to you, countryside, there's also this sort of like this tension between the excitement and the tedium. Of it, which is just like really unique and fascinating. And then it becomes about your rituals of where you stop, what you eat, what you listen to, who you're with, all that kind of stuff. So it becomes this great thing. I think a love for them, for me, also got in real young. I've mentioned before that I, you know, grew up, I was born in Brainerd, Minnesota, a small town up north in Minnesota. And then my parents moved out to Portland, Oregon. And we drove in a station wagon there, and then I lived there for 2 years, and then we drove back, and I have all these foggy dreamlike memories of, you know, waterfalls we stopped at, and I've never been able to look up and ascertain exactly which one it was, but some weird dinosaur park that just had dinosaur statues that was on a hill, and there was no fence, and I just remember sticking my little shoe out over that just abyss. I want to find it because someday maybe it'll be like, yeah, it was 20 feet. But, you know,
right.
But it felt to me like is that a bottomless pit? So the romance, the bought some very specific that I remember to this day, Star Wars action figures that were like, I found these on the road. You can only find these on the road. All that romance got in real early. So I love road trips. I like stopping at weird things, particularly in the era of social media. Isabella's asking, like, if there's like a weird Americana restaurant with like, this restaurant has a rat for a statue. Like, I need a photo of that. Absolutely love that stuff. Final thing I'm gonna say, and then I really want to hear what Jennifer has to say. I do love that, just like, even if you know the route, it is just sort of anything can happen. My wife and I have driven back and forth from LA to San Francisco for the San Francisco Sketch Fest several times. One of the last times we did, there was like a road closure at night, and it was just like, well, you got to take this, you know, little connecting county road between major freeways, and like, no big deal, right? But the weather conditions were perfect to create like a Victorian Dracula fog mist, can't see 2 feet in front of you on a winding, you know, county road that you've never been on before, with nothing but other headlights. I hope it's headlights in the distance, maybe. And it's that mix of true adventure. That's like adventure defined as incredibly scary stuff that you live through. And then when you're done, like, I had an adventure. You never know what's going to happen. That's what I love about it too. Jennifer, what's your relationship with road trips and weird things on the road?
I used to love road trips before children.
I wasn't going to put words in your mouth, but I was waiting for you.
Yeah. We did a road trip up north, and it was pretty painful. But before kids, you know, I used to love getting my road trip snacks, figuring out what we're going to stop for, if we're going to have some food. My husband and I, we used to organize our playlists. And then in more recent years, we would get into like, you know, let's figure out what podcast episodes we're going to listen to. I drove to Portland with my sister years ago. That was really fun. And yeah, I love road trips. My husband actually wants to get a VW van so we can go camping. He's fist pumping right now. He's in the kitchen.
All right. Hold on. And I grew up in one of those, Jen. I grew up
you did?
In one of those.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk off air. All right.
Okay.
You know, dreams, but
yeah, it actually looked pretty appealing. The people that we saw around our campsites, they had their different campers and there was this VW van. One night they were playing Nightmare Before Christmas. Sorry to mention this. One night they had a Nightmare Before Christmas movie night with their big TV and their VW van. The next night they had Halloween. I was like, that looks like freaking fun. I want to do that. They had a sweet setup. So maybe we'll do a road trip in a camper or a van and go camping.
Yeah.
Who am I? My husband's shaking his head.
is in no, we're not doing that?
is in, you think I did one weekend of camping, which he did everything. My first question that I asked him was, should I bring a suitcase? He was like, what? So yeah. And it was not true camping. There were bathrooms there and things like that. But hey, I don't know. Wouldn't that be kind of fun? Go across the U.S. Go camping in a van.
Sarah and I have talked about that because we saw more people do it, of course, during the pandemic where you can like rent, whatever kind of camper van, you know, you can go up to like it's a small apartment on wheels to, you know, it's a slightly larger van and you go to the bathroom outside and deal with it. You know, there's that range of options, but there is there's something so appealing about that. I love the little like the ones that got a little table inside. And you're like, I can sit here and drink coffee in the morning while somebody else drives. Amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if y'all know who Eric Striffler is of the YouTube brand. Pretty much it. Great guy, friend of Wangers and Schmoes and all that kind of world. But he about 6-7 years ago now. He lived in New York. His family's from there as well. Sold got out of his apartment, got a van, and has lived in his van for 6 or 7 years, driving around the country.
Wow!
And you know, he'll get an Airbnb. He'll go back home. He was in New York when we were there. We literally ran into him on the street randomly in Manhattan. It was crazy. And you know, you first hear about it, you're like, that sounds cool, and then you're like, I don't know. And then you go to his van when he's in town, and you're like, I get it. I want it.
There's just something
about it. It's not always the easiest, but he does it. He has, he runs his YouTube channel on the road from there, a pretty successful brand. And there's something about it that I'm like, it's not functional for me right now in my life, but I don't know. I can see it.
Yeah, I can see it. Jennifer, do you love the quirky roadside, the sort of the Americana of things that you would not really see anywhere else but on the side of a road?
Oh, I love that. I love that. But, you know, I haven't really ventured outside of California on a road trip, I must admit. I am sure that there is so much more to explore going to other places besides up and down the coast of California, which is pretty much all I have done. But there's a lot of great things to see.
That's pretty beautiful. Yeah. We drove from Minneapolis to LA, and that we were trying to go fast, but that was great fun to just see. So how vastly different different parts of America are.
I remember driving that 40 through the top of Texas, right, where you're up there just like this never ends. You hit Oklahoma, like immediately the dirt is red, like it's you know, Mexico, and it's like these invisible walls are up, and it's like, okay, well, now we've changed the wallpaper of the state, it's something new now. It's really fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Absolutely. Great thoughts, man. We recorded our episode about favorite drinks. Now I just want to have all my favorite drinks in the back of an RV. Anyway, great question, Belle. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more Cues of the Other.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Other Center. We are, man, we're having a lot of fun getting scared by ghosts, getting in our vans and driving around the country, seeing all the mystery spots we can find. It's been a lot of fun. Great questions today. And Joseph, we got one more left.
That's right. We have one more question that is actually sneakily two questions, which we entirely support. This comes to us from Ben Berkowitz, and Ben has a question for all of us. And then Ben also has a question for the Oasis fans among us. even though I asked, I think on air for Ken to remind me of what Oasis's famous songs are, I don't remember. I am deeply, deeply Oasis ignorant. I apologize. It has nothing to do with any judgment. Ken, I know you're big on Oasis. Jennifer, I can't remember. Are you an Oasis fan?
I like Oasis, but I only know a few of their songs, but I did a little research for this episode.
Great. Well, let's save Oasis for the big finish, and we'll do the general question first that Ben has for everyone. Ben asks, do you have a favorite record in your collection that was a difficult find or is signed? My favorite is Imperial Bedroom, signed by the legendary Elvis Costello. I'm a big record collector. That's been a big part of my life off and on. So this is a really fun question for me. Ken, I want to go to you. Do you now or have you ever collected vinyl?
I would never say I've collected it, but I own a few and I've gone through phases of, oh, I should go get a vinyl. So I have some that I cherish, Steve Martin comedy albums. I have a lot of Beatles ones that I didn't get, like a friend got for me one time. Actually, a couple times. A friend in my hometown was like, hey, I think you'd like these. And one of them is a numbered white album. From back in the day. You know, and we have two record players in our house. So that was part of the inspiration. Like when we moved in together, Grace had hers, and I was like, "Oh, I should go get some." I have like a 25-year edition of Liz Phair's "Exile in Guyville," which is interesting because her 30th edition concert is where I'll be in 2 weeks. But every time I go to do it, I don't. So this was a bit of a struggle for me. I almost feel sad that I haven't found that difficult vinyl to find, you know, the difficult vinyl to find or got anything set.
So I totally understand what you're saying is that this has not been a part of your life to be like, it's Saturday, I'm going record hunting.
Yeah.
But it does sound like you have some favorites in your collection. So what is the most precious to you and why? Is it the story? Is it that it's rare?
I think I would say I have the two, I have to look it up to make sure, which I, cause I don't, I, that's another bummer thing, is they're not up right now. They're in my garage and I'm thinking, but the two Steve Martin albums I have, Steve Martin being so, so important to me and, just a creative influence in a lot of different ways. I just did not intend to get them. My friend gifted them to me and then I framed them and I hung them up. And it was for a long time, would look up and just, you know, remind me of not only what he did, what he had done, but how he had he's had so many different aspects of his career, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he has. It's Let's Get Small, which is the 77 famous one there. And I'm trying to find the other one. I'll get back down that. But that, and then I also have I've seen him twice in concert doing bluegrass. Including once at the Pantages was a great show. So I think I have his album, The Crow, on a bluegrass album as well.
Yeah. They seen him with Martin Short at Hollywood Bowl was that was a dream come true.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is great. Jennifer, are you a vinyl collector or owner?
I used to have a record collection. And I always envision myself as an adult being a record collector. And then I go through fits of where I want to clean out everything. I don't know what it is. I think because I tend to be more of a hoarder and then I'm just like, I can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I had all my old records at my mom's house and I was like, we just got to clean out everything. I got rid of, I think, almost all of them. Wow. I kept a couple punk 7-inches that I thought, I was like, oh, this is, you know, because it reminds me of something from the past. But I had like Fleetwood Mac, I had Janis Joplin, Crosby, Stills and Nash, tons of classic rock records that I had collected over the years. And I just got rid of them all. And now I'm so sad. We have no place to have a record player in our house. Mm. And I wouldn't want my kids messing with it. But I think someday we'll have a record player. And there is something about that sound, right? Of the richness that a record player can bring that you can't get on a CD or a cassette tape.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sad. Maybe I'll have to rebuild my collection.
Yeah, no, that and
anything else.
It's really hard right now because what's going on with the modern moment of vinyl. It's I love that it's coming back, but it's all these re-releases, new pressings with the different colored vinyl. I made a joke about like, this one's got blood spat flatter. My friend was like, you joke, but there's a theme album, a soundtrack album to Halloween that is got like actual fluid between the vinyl. So it sloshes around with fake blood.
Yeah.
Anyway, point being that from my vinyl collection days, which were mid to late 90s in the first bout of vinyl collecting, there were albums that were just like there are 10 million. Every human alive in the 70s was issued a copy of Aqualung by Jethro Tull. So it's $3.
Yeah.
No matter where you go, it's $3 maybe. Mm-hmm. But now because those are the original records as opposed to reprints, things that used to be commonplace, even in like the 80s, are starting to ratchet up in price.
Ah, shoot.
Sorry.
That's frustrating. Right?
It might change again.
Yeah, it might change, but I don't know why I do that.
Just go hunting.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah. I'm exactly like you, except for without the purge part. I just keep and keep and keep, which is why we have an overflowing storage unit. So out of what you have or what you pine for, if you were to walk into a record store with a $50 gift card, what would you hope to find, Jennifer?
I probably would go for Grateful Dead. Anything. The Fleetwood Mac. Why did I get rid of that one? Gosh dang
it. Do signatures mean anything to you if you found an album signed Jerry Garcia? would that be meaningful for you?
No, I think that it would be more meaningful if I actually like met the person and they signed it. Like if I saw them, it's more about that experience than the actual signature for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it certainly adds value to the record.
Yeah,
absolutely. I don't have any signed. I take that back. I have a ton of signed albums where the owner has signed the album. I have lots of property of like Dan Swanson, you know, 1977. I have one Sinatra album where clearly the owner got annoyed by the play length. Because it was a session where Sinatra got frustrated that he thought it was too similar to other albums. So he said, we're going to do these arrangements, but we're going to play them twice as fast. So the album is ridiculously short. So the guy on the back has added up it's not printed on the album. He personally added up and wrote on the back the length of each track. And then like angrily underlined is the total play time of the album.
Wise.
So I do actually have a ton of signed albums, not signed by the artist. So for me in the early to mid 90s, when I got into Sinatra and Dean Martin and Elvis Gerald and all these people, record collecting, hunting for the records was really fun. At the time, like I still bought like Nirvana albums and Alice in Chains and other artists that I liked around that time were putting things out on records again too. So it was a great coming together. Mm-hmm. Foolishly, I was lucky to get some grants and student loans is how I paid for college, but they just send young irresponsible people checks. Like, save this. And the record temptation, it was bad. So did a lot of record hunting in those days, and it was a really interesting time to like music from the middle of the 20th century, 40s, 50s, 60s, because sometimes the only way I would know that an album exists is I would buy one Sinatra or Dean Martin album and it would have the original sleeve still. And there'd be, here's all the other albums you could buy. There's one album that was going to be Frank, Dean, and Bing Crosby together that I searched for years and could never find until I became an adult and read in a book. They never made that. They advertised it, but it didn't exist. Anyway, point being, I could share a million different hunting for a Holy Grail record. But I had seen on a sleeve that there was this album called Dream with Dean. It was this turning point for him and for Tin Pan Alley crooner music, because the next album after this one, he embraced what was called the country beat at the time and the twangy, and it made him popular. And he sold a bunch of albums because he kind of embraced the shift toward rock and other music. But he recorded this album called Dream with Dean, and it's just really stripped down, really bare. There's all old romantic songs, but they're sung by somebody who at that point was in his 40s and was kind of like, there's a little bit of a wink to it of like, these songs are naive, youthful love, but I'm going to kind of sing them like they're true. Anyway, great album. But I don't know if I'll ever find it. It's just a picture on a sleeve. So my brother loved all the same music, and we hunted with him and his girlfriend for records, and I went out one day for the holidays and was like, I'm not looking for myself. I'm looking for my brother and his girlfriend. And I found this album. And I was like, I can't buy it for myself. Today's mission was Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
So it was like really trying to be big. You know, I wrapped it up and I gave it to him, and even he was shocked. He was like, why didn't you keep this for yourself? I had to. And then, like the next week I found it again. I hadn't found it in years of looking for it. So not only do I love the album, but the actual physical album is like this. I used to call it my Christmas miracle album because it's like, I did a good deed. I was rewarded by the cosmos.
See, see kids, there's your lesson for the day.
Yep. Dream with Dean, it's called. And now you can buy it on iTunes right now. Easily accessible. But back then, you could only hear it if you found it.
Right.
A different time. Yeah. Lucky I got my record player back, have all my records. They're set up in the living room. Some nights we just make martinis and listen to jazz. It's great. So I'm back in hunting mode, but I got to be careful because what do you know? I'm running out of room. There you go. All right. On to the big finale, the Oasis question, which I will have nothing to do with. Ben Berkowitz asks, what's your favorite post Be Here Now Oasis tracks? And then Ben also offers his list via Spotify if any patrons want to check that out.
Right. Is that a hyperlink? I apologize, Ben. I was going to look at that. I'll find it. Sorry, because this is the way we are. I also own a Wild and Crazy Guy. That's the famous Steve Martin one, but I got confused because the picture was also used for the cover of his book, Born Standing Up. And I was like, that's not the name of it. Yes. And then I also forgot, and Joseph, I will sell it to you if you want it. The Return of Bruno, the studio album from Bruce Willis. I have it in vinyl.
You know, I've seen that one a couple times. I don't think that one is
quite as expensive. Okay. All right. So, yeah, quickly as I can to not bore any non-Oasis.
No, take your time. I took my time with Dream with Dean. Take your Oasis time. Don't rush through it for the Oasis fans out there.
So the story we had, they show up in 93 with Definitely Maybe. That's the Live Forever is the big single from that. One of the great radio rock songs of all time, I think. 95 is What's the Story of Morning Glory with Wonderwall and Don't Look Back in Anger and Champagne Supernova and all the stuff. So 97, they're at the height of their power.
Wonderwall. They're the Wonderwall people. Okay.
Now here we go. 97, they come out with a much anticipated third album called Be Here Now. It is an album that is both a complete mess and also I think time has proven it to be underrated. But it is their cocaine album. So we had mentioned this on a previous episode of how bands, their first album is, man, the struggle is real and we want to get out of our town, out of our small town, Manchester, and live the dream. By the third album, it's like all my friends are hanging around and they just stole my drugs. And that's kind of what Be Here Now is. So that's why that's the dividing line. But from then on, the band, they never, unfortunately, recapture the glory, I think. But there's some great songs on there. So, yeah, their 2000 album, Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, there's a back-to-back Noel Gallagher kind of led two songs called Where Did It All Go Wrong and Sunday Morning Call. These hit me at the perfect time in my life when I was really just massaging depression into an identity as a brand. And these two songs just absolutely just, where did it all go wrong? I'm 24. I don't know that answer. Good question, Noel. And I absolutely love that. And it's a pretty good album. And I saw, that's when I saw them on tour the most, was supported that album. So there's that. Oh, and also track one on that is Effin' in the Bushes, but not the censored title. And that has often been my stand-up comedy intro song. It has no lyrics other than a sound sample where that phrase is said. But it's actually great. It's a great rock song. Then they come out with Heathen Chemistry in 2002. The lineup of the band is changing. Noel and Liam, the fights between them were never an act. They were very real. They don't speak to each other right now. So there's not a lot on there. Little by Little is a good song. Stop Crying Your Heart Out was the big single. Little plotting for me. Songbird, Liam Gallagher actually wrote a song about his son at the time. It's cute, but and unfortunately that album kind of fades away fast. But in 2005, they released one of my favorite albums, Don't Believe the Truth. And on it is Lila. That's a great song. And there's this song called A Bell Will Ring, written by Jem Archer, one of the new members of the band that I think is great. And there's two songs. There's a song called Mucky Fingers. And the first time I heard it, I went, oh, no, this is lazy. What are you doing? It's 4 minutes of like one chord. Like, I was like, ah, that I saw them do the song live. And it was a slap in the face. It's one of my favorite Oasis songs. It's underrated. Got some great stuff. And on that track is absolutely a top five Oasis song for me. It's called Keep the Dream Alive, written by Andy Bell, actually a new member of the band. And it is, it's one of those songs that's just too real for me. And the genius of Oasis for me is that they aren't super poignant artists who are writing some really deep stuff. Their lyrics are written with a pint in their hands and they're meant to be sung in a pub at midnight. And Keep the Dream Alive is that. And it's a very, my dreams are gone and I don't know why. And I have the answers, but when I wake up in the morning, they're gone. And that's not the exact lyrics, but that's the image band. And Keep the Dream Alive is absolutely, I would contend, one of the best Oasis songs, and it gets overlooked. I think in 2008, they came out with an album called Dig Out Your Soul. And that's when you can tell the end was nigh. There's not a lot of shock of the lightning. So, okay, I'm looking at it now. Bag It Up is all right. That's all right. And then the band broke up after that. So, and never to be reunited, they claim. I just saw Noel Gallagher live in concert. His High Flying Birds band, which is just, it's called Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, has some of his best songwriting. I really think it's some of his best work, and I highly recommend you check it out if you're Oasis fans who haven't taken that dive. Liam's got BDI, some solo stuff. Liam's always going to be one of my favorite lead singers, but not the songwriter that Noel was. So there you go. That's my journey and many concerts. That's when I saw them in concert from like 1998 to about 2008 a lot. So love seeing them.
Well, I'm going to be seeing Guns N' Roses, Axl, Slash, and Duff together for the third time.
Nice.
The band that would never, ever get back again. They're now multiple years into their not in this lifetime tour, making fun of themselves for claiming they would never get back together.
Right.
So what I'm saying, Ken, is there's hope.
It would be spectacular. Now more than ever, they just so legitimately hate each other. And look, I know, you know, Don Henley and Glenn Frey at one point just hated each other. They hell froze over there. Fleetwood Mac. I mean, yeah, even Buckingham hating them right now. And they hate Buckingham. Like it is what it is. And I know Axl and Slash, it's one of the great friendships / frenemy ships that's gone on throughout history. But
yep.
I would love to see it. Yeah. I'd love to see it. So good stuff.
And
yeah.
Yo, go ahead.
This is like the second or third time we've had a specific Oasis question asked for me. And I was trying to figure that out other than obviously I talk about it a lot, but I think our primary love of Star Wars definitely connects with hearts of people in the UK because of the connection over there. So I think we have a good amount of UK listeners who are like always interested to hear my Oasis takes. And I love that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I do know Wonderwall. I have heard that many times.
Yeah.
And it's good. I like it. And I don't think I've ever heard you describe them that way as, that it is their pub songs, and that makes that helps me get into the groove of what they are. So I'm gonna have to give them
give them
more of a listen.
They famously fought with Blur in the Britpop Wars, and it was kind of a press manufactured feud in the mid 90s. But some war I think at one point Axl and Liam exchanged war words. They're you know, that was part of the Oasis brand. They're fighting boys from Manchester. But yeah, it was Blur makes music for Sunday morning, and Oasis makes music for Saturday nights. And I think if you look at them through that lens, yeah, they're not the world's greatest poets, but man, you're gonna have a lot of fun singing with them.
Nice. And just to bring everything full circle, would you want a album signed by either? Would you want an album where they're cussing one another out in their signatures?
So, yeah, well, I would like, there is famously a release, a 22 minute argument between them that was recorded and released in like 93
and
94. I think under the name Wibbling Rivalry. I think someone correct me. It's been a while. And yeah, it charted. It charted in like UK. It was just them fighting because they used to fight.
Was there a dance track put to the back of it, or was it just raw audio anger?
It's Noel and Liam fighting. Like all that stuff was real. And and that was part of the just the madness and the entertainment of it. So yes, I would love that. Liam, they both seem like good blokes if you run into them. Liam has that slightly that Paul Westerberg energy where the stories of people who have met Westerberg and are lifelong replacement fans, and he does not give a damn and is kind of grumpy and is like Liam has that energy. Noel, by all accounts, though, comes off and is arrogant in a lot of interviews playing his persona. All accounts is just a good, simple-hearted bloke who just wants to watch football and drink beer. You know, like I was reading Emily Haynes of Metric. They just went on tour with him and Garbage, and she said Noel couldn't have been more of a gentleman and more just down to earth and approachable. I want an autograph from him. I'd be afraid to approach Liam.
And Jennifer, you do you have any Oasis thoughts to add to Ken's impassioned thoughts?
I don't have many. The pub songs, definitely the best description, because you hear them, you might be out at a pub, and it's great kind of, I don't want to say background music, but it just kind of adds to the ambiance. I was listening to some of their albums last night. There was one song I really liked from 2002, Stop Crying Your Heart Out.
Yeah. It was a single from them. Yeah. And it is good. It's good. I described it as plotting earlier because it had a little bit of the, they're trying to get back to what they did, and maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should do something new. But yes, it's a good song. Stop Crying Your Heart.
Right, exactly. Maybe that's why I kind of liked it, was because it did kind of feel like what they used to do.
Mm-hmm.
It also reminded me of like an episode of The OC, which was around that time.
Yes.
Right? That kind of vibe.
Phantom Planet doing the theme song of that with Jason Schwartzman on drums.
Yes. But I like Oasis.
Yeah.
They're a good band. And
Yeah,
even if they're drunk, I don't know. It adds to
their charm. There's a fun distinction between like sit and listen to this music and appreciate all the nuances and have this music as a companion,
yeah,
to other activities. There's, you know, it's kind of a joke and parody, but there was the string of Jackie Gleason kind of easy listening jazz albums that were all many of them were named Music to Blank By, you know, Drink By or Make Love By or whatever. Make Love in the older context of romance, not just straight up have sex, which is always a shock when you're listening to a Frank Sinatra song called Mind If I Make Love To You. Like, very forward, Frank. Very forward. Oh, you mean woo. Got it. Okay. But I almost feel like it's fun to go through other albums or other artists you like and go, if this was called Music to Blank By, what would it be? And it sounds like Oasis is Music to Get in a Fight in a Pub By.
But also, you know, clap onto your buddy's shoulders and go, yeah, are we having a great night? Yeah, I'm just bounce along. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Music to Bounce in a Pub By, then.
Yeah.
Lovely. Well, those are our questions. You want to take us home, Ken?
I do. Thanks for listening. Thanks for these questions. We absolutely love doing it. You can find us on Twitter at Four Center Pod. We are on Threads as well. Others could be happening. We'll let you know, of course. Facebook pages, Four Center Podcast, Instagram, and YouTube. Don't forget, at the time of this release, tomorrow, October 27th, 2 p.m. Pacific, will be our next live show. Questions of the other variety coming your way. And then podcasts available a lot of different spots. Apple Podcasts, like we said earlier, leave us a review over there. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/4center. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, kennapsok.com. And then speaking of music, this has been one of my fun little projects I've been working really hard on, and it's finally out in the world. I have no musical talent, but I have 7 songs on the way written with Brian B.C. Tiller and old handsaw Sean Arnold. We are called the Moonagers. It's a little band project. And our first song, which I describe to friends as if Tom Petty sang an Oasis B-side from 1997. First song is on the way November 3rd. You can get it on Bandcamp and other spots everywhere. More information coming soon. Jennifer, where can they find you and your favorite pub songs?
I can't wait for that album. I can't wait. It's going to be so great. You can find me on TikTok at JenniferLanda1138 and YouTube, Instagram, where I'm posting all things retro at Jennifer Landa.
Wonderful. Joseph, take us home where they can find all your wonderful projects.
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. I'm freshening up my website, josephscrimshaw.com, to have more recent stuff. So you can find links there to the various film festivals where the short horror film, The Nightmare Adorable, that I've been working on, you can find if it is playing anywhere near you. Right now, it is going to be playing soon in Bulgaria, in Mobile, Alabama. And I'm going to be in Mobile, Alabama for the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival. If you're into cosmic horror, check it out. It is a great film festival. I'm excited for that one. And I've recently put out for Spooky Times a cosmic horror story that I wrote and did a reading of. It is called The Beast That Ate the Dawn, and it is a fictional, it is by a fictional writer that this writer allegedly wrote this story in 1923, and it is about a frustrated writer who is trying to write ad copy for a breakfast cereal, but in the process discovers horror, absolute horror. So if that sounds like fun, you can find that on my Bandcamp.
Check it out. Oh, it's all tied to such a wonderful project there. Also, The Beast Who Ate the Dawn is Joseph's heavy metal album coming out. Slash on guitar. There you go. Hey, everybody. A lot of fun. Thanks for the questions. We'll see you next time here on Other Side.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.